The county's number one talk show, the 9 till noon show on Highland Radio.
And now it's time for the talk of the Northwest, the 9 to noon show with Greg Hughes on Highland Radio.
Hello and a very good morning to you. It is 4 minutes past nine on this Friday, the 21st of April, 2023. I do hope you're very well indeed. And hopefully you're on board now for the next 3 hours for this show. And of course, throughout the day here on Highland Radio. Later on, Michael and Fanula will be in with us for That's Entertainment. We have an actor in studio as well, or joining us at least. And there's also some live music. But to get us a little bit closer to all of that, we are now going to introduce to you our Friday panel, who'll run through some of the big stories of the day and some of the top stories making the headlines throughout the week. Let's say good morning to them right now then. First all, of all, we'll say good morning to Maria Rush, fitness instructor with Rush Fitness and blogger at Maria Living Out Loud.
Good morning, Greg. How are we all?
Good. Are you going to be living out loud with us this morning?
Oh, making loads of noise as usual, Greg.
Excellent. Good stuff. That's what we like to hear. Also, Richard Logues, the project manager in Transport London. He's back with us again. Good to see you. Good to have you on board, Richard.
Thanks for having me again, Greg. It's a real pleasure.
Brilliant stuff. And last but not least, Councillor Martin Harley, Fine Gael Councillor in the Stranorlar Municipal District. Good morning to you, Councillor Harley. How are you keeping?
Not too bad, Greg. Good morning to you. Good morning to Maria and Richard as well.
All right. Now, we're going to hear the views of our guests, of course, but we want yours as well. WhatsApp or text 086 60 25,000, or give us a call on 074 91 25,000. Now, the government's expected, or is expecting, a surplus this year of 10 billion euro, with a surplus of 16 billion expected next year. Last year, I think there was an 8 billion euro surplus. The Taoiseach's pledged tax cuts, welfare hikes and infrastructure spending. But Leo Varadkar said he would also set aside a portion of the windfall corporation taxes in what he called an anti-austerity fund. The money is coming, of course, as I just mentioned, from corporation tax receipts. But what should we actually be doing with this money now? Should we be parking it, or should we be spending it in the areas that it's most needed? Shall I start with you, Martin, seeing as you're up on my screen here? What would you like to see the government do with this 26 and 8 is what, 34 billion over the last 3 years and into the next?
Yeah, well, I feel that I think we need to be parking some, but we don't want to end up like we were in 2008, 2009.
Well, we can't, you see, because apparently we've changed the rules of banking. People have more savings on deposit. People aren't borrowing beyond their means. That's what caused everything, we're told, in 2008.
Yeah, well, we're depending on the taxes from the building of houses. So now we're depending on the taxes of corporation tax, because so we have to make sure that we our corporation tax at the moment is low. So this is why a lot of the companies are operating out of Ireland.
OK, but let's hypothesise, right? Let's say we had what happened in 2008 again, and this is what we're putting the money away to avoid. What would happen in this country, do you think, by way of a similar situation 2008? People would start being people would start living in abject poverty. We'd have children that were that couldn't be fed. We'd have people that didn't have any homes. We'd have a healthcare system that would be on the brink of collapse. We would have a situation where you couldn't even get an appointment with your GP. That's exactly how we're living now, Martin. Let's spend it now.
Yeah. Well, there is a lot of issues there at the minute. The fact that we can't see a GP is partly down to the fact that we have we're helping out the Ukrainian situation, where we have more people coming into the country, and we have to do that under our EU rules. In fairness, there is a lot of packages in place this year. There's been.
That's just in relation to that, by the way. And I'm sorry, this is a conversation, right? I'm not pulling you up on everything. The greatest concern from GPs at the moment is not having to deal with a growing population. It's a government decision to decide to roll out more free GP access to younger people without properly thinking it through or having the resources there to do it. That's what the GPs will tell you is part of the problems going forward.
Oh, yeah. No, suppose that is an issue, that we're given GP care now up to the age of it's nine, and free GP care. We have to, our big problem at the minute, I see where our major general hospitals is, that we haven't got enough people out there now to do home help. there's a massive need for more people doing home
health. So here's a bold move. Let us use some of these billions then to properly pay nurses that might stay and work here and properly pay home helps so that it would seem an attractive job to go into. That, you know, I'm trying to use this money to fix the problems that you're highlighting here.
Yeah, I agree with you, because what's happened at the moment is we have a lot of beds taken up in general hospitals where people can't get home because they've got no home help, and they won't allow them out of the hospital till home help's in place. So I do agree with you there that we need to the home help situation in Ireland at the minute, we need to look at that, because we can free up a lot of beds, and that is part of the problem. I know at the moment three people that want to get home, but they can't get home at the minute because they can't get home help.
Yeah.
So
it just sounds already the way it's being set out here by the Taoiseach Leo Varadkar and whoever was Taoiseach, and from whatever party they might be saying the same, that we're all now supposed to hold our breath for tax cuts, welfare hikes and infrastructure spending to be announced in the budget at the end of this year. That's all well and good. What will it mean? Maybe an extra £6 in people's pockets every week. It won't really make any difference. Yet all the problems that are in this country at the moment will persist. Do we not need to start doing politics in a different way? How long have we been talking about not being able to rely on these corporation tax receipts? Where is all the money gone that we're supposedly not able to rely on?
Yeah, well, a lot of the money at the minute has been the money that's been given out on different helps during the COVID and during the times of run at the minute.
That's pittance. Look, the surplus is what we have left over after what we spent. So the government has 8 billion last year, isn't it? So that means they took in 8 billion less than they spent.
More than they spent, yeah.
More than they spent, okay? Right, so we managed to cover those debts, and yet we still have 8 billion left over. So we can't blame then, can we, that spending?
Oh, no, we can't blame the spending now, but as I say, you take a country like Norway that is depending totally on the oil. They put so many billion aside each year that when it comes to a time that they don't have any, that oil is not their main income, that the money will be there. I mean, we have an ageing population at the minute, and we talk about the pension. We don't have enough money in the budgets to cover pensions going forward, because people are living longer.
We were going to make people work longer to fix that problem, and now we're not talking about doing that anymore. We're talking about using this money now to fix that problem. But I take your point, and we'll come back to it and tease it out a bit more. Maria Rush, what would you like to see? What do you think we should be doing?
I think what Councillor Martin Hurley said there about putting some money away is not a bad idea. I think we are very quick to jump into the whole idea that we throw money at problems and we'll fix problems. But that's not always going to be the case.
But that's given. But Maria, with respect, that's giving up on us able to do anything correctly then. So because 100%. If by spending to try and make people's lives better is seen as just throwing money at a problem that doesn't fix it, well then that identifies a significant problem in and of itself then, doesn't it?
Massive problems. And the biggest issue is that when we throw money at things, we don't know where it goes when it goes into the system, and it's not going where it needs to go. Like, it's great to say that we have the lowest corporation tax rate and all these companies are coming, they're bringing business, they're bringing employment. But what I'm seeing as an employer happening is that the young people in this country are leaving because they cannot get mortgages. They cannot get what they need to get to stay here. And, you know, when you see young teachers, young nurses being pulled into virtual recruitment conferences in Australia and the Middle East, being offered packages of up to €70,000 with their flights, with their healthcare, with all that, why would you not? Do you know, this is the reality of it. So, personally, I'm speaking as an employer and as a family member with a lot of cousins who are heading that way at the minute, and it's absolutely devastating to our local communities. So yes, of course, what I said at the start about keeping money aside, what I mean there is we still have $224 billion of national debt. Of course, it makes sense in a basic budget level to think about that. We have the National Reserve Fund in case trouble hits, as they say. We have, there was talk during the week about a sovereign fund to address what you said there, Martin, about your pensions and your ageing population. Those things are all common sense, but we also have to put money into our health system, into our education, into all the things that we are facing as people on the ground every day. And I mean, friends, family, members here of ours who are working in the health system, they are pulled from pillar to post. I know one woman who was on a week's annual leave last week who worked 5 days. This is the reality. So the money needs to go into the right parts of the system.
And this is, and again, anyone can contact me and correct me if I'm wrong, if I'm reading this wrong. But what we're seeing, what I feel like we're seeing at the moment is that, say, for instance, in the area of construction, that you've got a lot of very big companies that saw what was coming down the line. They saw the money that's there and they started turning the tap off. You know how they turn the tap off with the oil? They started turning the tap off because they can't progress with projects because, you know, of increased costs and so on and so forth. And then lo and behold, what we're hearing now is, what is it, €150,000 per house or per unit that's being given to these people to progress these projects. We're starting to throw this money at the same group of individuals that Martin Harley referenced, that the housing boom being the cause of the last recession. And yet here we are again. They seem to be able to turn off the tap in terms of building and construction, and we're going to throw billions at them. And that's how we seem to spend money. That's not going to keep nurses in this country, Maria.
No, it's not. And then the whole idea of the housing, all that I'm reading, everything that I read is about, it's all hypothetical language about initiatives and ambition and plans and schemes and incentives. Where's the actual, show me the plans where this is going to happen and get the people on the ground doing it, make it happen. We can talk about social housing and affordable housing and creating housing and building all we want. Talking's not going to get us where we need to be. And having a five-year plan is great if you actually act upon it. But we're very good in this country at having plans about things and talking about plans and actually not doing what we need to do. You know, there's very little building happening in Letterkenny. I'm not seeing many houses going up. You know, it would be great to see it. It needs to happen. But straight away also, when you read the articles in the Irish Independent and the Irish Times, as we're talking about the money going into the construction industry to help to build these houses, we're also already talking about who's going to be allowed to apply for those, who's going to be able to access them, how much money they need to be earning. Let's build them first. Let's get the houses built, and then we have somewhere to put people.
Yeah, you know, and not to mention, too, you talk about all talk and no action. Not a single, is it, what do you call those houses again, the prefabbed houses or whatever you might call them, their names escape me, has been delivered yet, not one. And we've been talking about that for a long time. And also, too, I hear ministers use language like commencements. What does commencements mean? There's 2,000 or 3,000 houses were commenced. What does that mean? Planning permission was applied for? A site's been bought? Does it mean the foundations are in? You know, I don't understand what that means. But anyway, we'll get to that maybe. Richard Logue has been waiting patiently. Richard, thank you so very much indeed. The floor is yours. Good morning again.
Yeah, so looking at that surplus, I agree with Maria and with Martin about setting aside, you know, certainly money for sovereign funds and for, you know, as an insurance policy against future recessions. However, the one thing we need to do, and Maria touched on it very eloquently just there, is about a lack of investment. And I would say that a chunk of that money needs to go in investment. Now, the big problem we have right now across the country is that young people are immigrating, not because of jobs, they're immigrating because they can't get housing. And the Taoiseach stood up in the Dáil, I think it was about 2 weeks ago, and said that there was a deficit of around about 250,000 homes in Ireland. Now, let's be honest, we're not going to build those in Dublin. Dublin is pretty much full up. We should be looking for a wholesale. Now, I talk about development plan, but a plan with an implementation plan attached to it. So the one thing we're really crying out for on the western half of Ireland is decent infrastructure, adequate housing, and then with that should come, we hope, the investment from employers to bring jobs into the country. Because, you know, it's a bit like the bath with the water running out, and we don't have enough housing to keep young people in jobs. And the big crisis that we have, and Maria mentioned this, and I would know this from my late mother, you know, the big crisis we have is that we don't have enough people to actually maintain the health service as it is. And the reason they're not staying is that they can't afford a property. 100 years ago, what were the first things that the Irish Free State did on independence? They built a huge programme of social housing, and they set up the Ardna Crusher power station to address an energy deficit. And here we are 100 years later, crying out for social housing, needing an energy deficit. And by the way, particularly in Donegal, we need to resolve that mica issue very, very quickly, because I know it's going to cost money, but it needs to be dealt with. And, you know, I always say this, we've got to get that issue properly resolved so everybody gets adequate compensation for getting their houses rebuilt. And that will cost money. Yeah. Now, we shouldn't just go headlong into tax cuts just because we think there's a general election coming up. I think that's a false economy. And to be honest with you, if we have €6 more in your pockets every month, will it really make a difference? The real issue is that we need to do the investment both on housing to the scale that the state did when the state had far less money than it has now. And that was 100 years ago.
Yeah, but even with the money, Richard, because we then need to change how we think, maybe the planning and all that type of stuff, because even with the money, like, there has been a really significant underspend in the Department of Housing in two successive years. Money literally has been given back. And the irony of people emigrating, we can't really attract the teachers, the healthcare professionals, or even the people that to work in construction to Ireland if they're not here, because there's nowhere for them to live.
Can't afford it.
But, there isn't even actually rooms for them.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, you look on the estate agent sites like Daft.ie and look at amount of properties available to rent. You know, the private sector we shouldn't be relying on the private sector for, you know, affordable housing. The state needs to take the bull by the horns and essentially build, but not just plant houses in the middle of a random field. Do it properly as a part of a plan with adequate infrastructure and, you know, make sure we have proper road and rail networks, obviously, in order to service all of this. You know, we've got to get away from this idea that you can plant houses 10 miles away in the middle of nowhere in a field and expect people are going to access services and use them. You've got to do it in a sensible way. And we are very good on plans, and Maria mentioned this in the country, but we are absolutely hopeless at implementation. We need to start looking at
problems. What needs to change there? Because let's face it, right, it's not the ministers that implement this stuff. Every time we talk about various problems, it seems to be that we find ourselves coming back to the permanent government, the civil servants that are there, because the politicians can promise the sun, the moon and the stars, but they are they not really the people that make the decisions and implement those policies that we talk of? I mean, it's like that we were having a conversation about the provision of public IVF treatment yesterday, and it's supposed to be coming in 2 or 3 months, and there's nothing in terms of implementation, no knowledge, no nothing. And that's on a 10 million euro spend, not the multiples of billions we're talking about now. So we need to find out, do we not, where the blockage is. Where is it?
The general rule is that government ministers decide policy, civil servants implement that policy. And that needs to be reiterated right across the board. I'm not going to name any names. I think we know who we're talking about. There was an Oireachtas committee during the week, which kind of, you know, showed that issue out loud. But basically, you know, we have to ensure that government ministers make sure that the policy that they decide is actually implemented. You know, the buck stops at the ministers. We elect the ministers. We don't elect the civil servants. But it is the job of the ministers to ensure that their policy is implemented. And they can't keep hiding behind, oh, well, I put it to the civil servants and they said no. No, you've decided a policy. You're the minister. We put you in there. Mm.
Martin, then you'll have the Department of Housing saying, well, we've greenlit the council to do this, that and the other. And I think, what, 3-odd houses were delivered by the council last year under quite a wide-ranging number of schemes, short-term schemes from government. What is the council's role in this? I mean, you must know at a local level where the hold-ups are, beg your pardon.
Yeah, I know at a Donegal County Council level that there's a new, we're meeting on Monday regarding the next 24 to 30 development plan. And over the last number of months, we have say in a Stranraer area, we have looked at different lands around the towns of Stranraer and Balmafay that can be looked at, that the council can put social housing on. I do agree with Richard there that we do need to move this quicker. It's too slow. It's too slow because I know myself, like if you were elected tomorrow morning and you had a 5-year term that and you had some idea, the the 5 years could be up before that idea could be dealt yeah. with. And that's mm-hmm. that's too slow. That's not good enough. We've gone to Northern Ireland and I see houses going up very quickly. And I think to myself, how come we can't?
And that's without a government.
We seem, exactly. And but you wonder why? Is that they're supposed to have been run by London at the minute, and that's the way they seem to the parties there seem to be happy enough with at the minute, because they're not prepared to come around the table and talk, most of them. So I think that we need to move on the projects. We need to move the projects quicker. We need to get the planning in place quicker. And we need to look at all the different... you take us in Sonora there now, where I am, that we put in a treatment plant that can cover up to 12 to 14,000 houses, which was needed. Mm. And there was an investment of about 10 million there in the last number of years. But at the same time now, we haven't built any houses.
Yeah, okay, well, let's not even build them, right? As sure as night follows day, next year, Stranraer or Ballybofey will have the country's highest commercial vacancy rate. It happens every year. What's being done to sort of say, right, that's not changing. We're not going to attract any further businesses. In fact, we're going to go around the town with a road, so who's to say what impact that might have? What are yous doing to try and get some of that commercial property then into residential property? If you can't build it, convert it.
Yeah, well, I suppose it depends again, back to the stage of who owns the properties and are they prepared to go down that road. Maybe people think that the property is worth more than it actually is worth as well, so that they're looking for rents for commercial use that is above what is viable.
But you have to ask the question. You have to ask the question why they are prepared to have a commercial premises lying vacant rather than loan the rent and bring someone in. I mean, that in and of itself is a question. But Maria, I just find it, you see, hopeless. And I don't want to be negative or whatever. It's not this government. It could be the next government or whatever combination of government parties that might get together whenever. It just seems to be more talk and no action, which really was the crux of your first contribution. It's kind of frustrating because even if you, say, go to the election ballot box tomorrow, what do you vote for? Who do you vote for what?
I think, the closer we get to the general election as well, we're going to see more and more promises and great news being spun out. And, you know, it's going to be a challenge to decipher the difference or figure out the pieces that are genuine and the pieces that are spin for votes. But I mean, going back to what Martin said there as well, and you know, there is a drive. The people who are on the ground in the local council are there trying to make a difference. When you have planning and initiatives and schemes, but nothing actually happening, it's very frustrating. And I think the closer we get to the election, it's almost like the TDs want to be seen to be saving money. How is it that we can spend or underspend 1.2 billion on the housing budget in a housing crisis? That doesn't make any sense whatsoever. Don't be proud of that. Use that money to actually fix it.
Well, you referenced your business, a very successful business. If those type of anomalies were happening financially in any medium-sized business or large business, you would change the people at the head of that business. You would say, this business is not being run effectively here. Now, I mean, I suppose a business that would be running an underspend, you know, but you get my point, right? It's a mismanagement, really, of really quite significant funds. Like, we don't want to see this money all of a sudden that we're being told we can't spend now, all of a sudden turn up at election time.
And this is what I mean. There will always be those promises. You know, we've talked about health, we've talked about housing, we've talked about education. There was a harrowing article in the Irish Independent yesterday about sex assault data and the services that we are waiting on and conversations that have been happening since 2019. It's 4 years ago. Let's get this done. It's 4 years later and there are still thousands and thousands and thousands of people waiting for those services. Those aren't services that we can kick down the line any longer. That's another one example of something that just came to my attention this week. If you open any newspaper, you're going to see another 1,000 issues coming at you. If you speak to 10 different people, there's 10 different issues. So, you know, we will always find things. There are things, obviously, as a business person, as a parent, that are going to affect me more than somebody who isn't in this situation. Mm-hmm. But we have to, as you mentioned, when the person at the top is throwing money into something, but the people that are delegated to manage aren't either able to or aren't willing to put it to where it needs to go, there's a disconnect somewhere. And I think
when you've seen your civil servants literally treating ministers with absolute contempt and them on almost 300k a year, I think that really pulls the curtain back some way, because that's the glimpse, once they were dragged kicking and screaming into an Oireachtas committee, that's the glimpse we get at the attitude.
And there is also a disconnect, and I've said it before, between urban and rural, where when most of the decisions have been made by people who are always in one situation, they can't understand fully the situation of people who aren't in that situation.
Richard, is any country getting it right, though? You know, we do see around the world similar conversations happening all the while. It's almost as if there's a global, handbook that everybody follows. I mean, I'm not asking you to start naming countries that it is working, and don't go near the Nordic countries because it's too easy. But are there any countries that we could look to and say, well, that's how it's done?
Well, we often talk about the Nordic countries, don't we, about the good models of, what I would consider an excellent sort of social democratic model of government, where you do have, countries like Norway who spent their North Sea oil money on a massive sovereign wealth fund, which allowed the country to maintain, a high class health service and use their North Sea oil money pretty wisely. And I certainly applaud the fact that, the budget surplus is going, into a rainy day fund, so to speak. But the issue we've got is, the reason so many people died in a potato famine is we were living off potatoes. We're now currently living off corporation tax receipts. The last recession, we were living off stamp duty receipts. So, the Irish government needs to look at a model of tax receipts where we actually have a pretty, good mix. And I know that they're planning to expand the population between now and 2040 to a further 3.5 million using Project Ireland 2040. But, unless we actually invest some of that money on basic infrastructure, not just housing, road infrastructure, rail infrastructure, getting, the state ready for investment. Mm-hmm. And also ensuring that we're not delivering and developing everything in Dublin and the East Coast and ignoring the West. We need to actually do this in a really balanced way. And we need to actually have a plan of implementation. We can talk fine words, but until we actually have an implementation plan and actually show that we're meeting that, that's where I think we need to take the politics, if you like, out of things like infrastructure and out of things like almost like the health service as well, because I think there is a consensus.
Well, how do you do that? How do you take that out of politics then? What is the? I mean, I would have already been in favour of some sort of a cross party body that is responsible for important things like health, education, and development. But again, that is not a model we see elsewhere, is it? No one's going to give over that power if they've managed to find their way into government.
It would be a sensible approach, Greg, but obviously the nature of adversarial politics, you always have a government and an opposition, and it's the job of the opposition to pillory the government. And there's a job, when that government goes back into opposition, then it's their job to pillory the new government. Mm. But, I almost think that we need to actually have, things like the health service and infrastructure as part of a independent commission in a way. But then how do you select the independent commissioners, and do you make it cross-party? I'm not sure.
And I suppose Sláinte Care to some extent is kind of cross-party, but where's that going? But Martin, I mean, you would know at a council level, but there's not much party politics really goes on at council level. Councillors of the same area will work together. The county as a whole will work together where needs be. I mean, that's the way it is, isn't it? And we don't see that reflected on a national scale. It is all the shouting back and forwards. And listen, post-election, the heads might change, but it'll all be the same. It'll just be the same thing with different people in different places.
Yeah, well, in fairness, Donegal County Council is probably one of the few councils in Ireland that now, for 9 years now, we've had an all-inclusive council where all parties have been in the mix, and which has worked well to an extent with the majority of the councillors. So, but I understand at a government level that there's a lot of talk goes on and a lot of talk about different issues, but I feel that we have to get we say that the ministers are in charge. The ministers maybe get 100,000 a year, but they're telling civil servants who are getting 200,000 and 300,000 a year what to do. But I don't think that's working. I don't think it has worked for a lot of years. And but so I think that there has to be a change there. We look at the billions, and I know, as Richard said there, we do need in Donegal to sort the Mica issue out. But there are a lot of houses for sale in Donegal at the minute, and I think the council should be going and spending the money to buy up houses,
okay,
to get our people into houses.
And derelict houses as well, Martin. There's an awful lot of properties in the town centres, which a relatively small investment would do them up into good family homes here for people who need them. Yeah. That's a real scourge. And it's not just in Donegal, it's right across Ireland.
Yeah, okay. Yeah. Listen, thanks all three of you. You're hearing from Richard Logue, Maria Rush, Councillor Martin Harley. Back with more from them after we take this break in about 3.5 minutes. All right, we'll do a quick run around then on just staying with politics between before we move on to other things. Discussions on we're hearing calls from a number of areas for the establishment of a rural political party. I think Deputy Michael Fitzmaurice is suggesting that there's a farmers group that was really recently established that's also talking about it. Do we need another political party? Do we need one with a specific focus on rural issues, Richard Logue? Could we find it really not doing an awful lot other than maybe pushing against, you know, climate change proposals, the green policy and that type of stuff? Or maybe that's what we need. What do you think?
Well, I think the current crop of rural independent TDs have obviously realised that they're actually doing a pretty good job representing the interests of their constituents. If you take the likes of Matty McGrann, the Healy Rays and many others, I mean, they've certainly punched above their weight as independents. Perhaps they've decided now that it's more in their interest to work as a collective group.
But they're achieving that in support of the government, though. It's by backing the government that they get their little sweeteners, though. They wouldn't be forthcoming if they were just a rural party, or perhaps they could still go into government supporting the government. I don't know.
Don't forget, look at the arithmetic of the current Dáil. I mean, if they were to suddenly withdraw their support from the government, I think the government would be in an awful lot of trouble and we'd see a very quick general election. I would think that, you know, they've obviously been working as a technical group inside Dáil Éireann for some years, and that's generally worked because that's given them pooled speaking rights, which they wouldn't have if they were just standalone independents. So perhaps they've decided they're taking the logical step. And, you know, and this is not my personal view, but I hear an awful lot of people, certainly in Donegal, who'd be very unhappy with some of the policies of the Greens, particularly around things like turf cutting and all of that. So maybe they feel that they can punch even more above their weight as a formal party than as a kind of a loose group as they are at the moment.
Yeah, and I'm not sure any proposals actually necessarily includes them or not. I haven't read that, but it may or may not, Richard, but it would make sense if it were to. What do you think, Councillor Martin Harley, if Fine Gael, would you like to see a new party representing rural Ireland primarily?
Well, I know Michael Fitzmaurice has talked about this before. He has championed this on different occasions over the last number of years. C.S. Grant championed one couple of particular issues, but you know, if you're elected as a TD, you're expected to work on issues that affect all of the people of all of Ireland. Like, no disrespect to the Healy Rays, but the Healy Rays don't really care what happens outside Kerry.
Yeah, but no disrespect. A lot of people feel the current government doesn't care about anything that happens outside of Dublin.
But I don't. I don't think that is correct. No, but.
Well, why don't you hop on the train down to Dublin and tell them about it?
No, but if you were living in Dublin and paying $2,500 a month rent to try and live there, and I wouldn't.
If only a government had the power to build more houses and better infrastructure, so that people didn't feel they had to live in Dublin.
Yeah, but I suppose Dublin is at a full capacity. That's why people are commuting from towns like Tullamore and Kilkenny and to Dublin every day to work, because it is, and they're spending 2.5 to 3 hours a day in their cars, which is not good for their family life. Mm. And then probably one of the things that happened through the pandemic is this working from home has if you can, if your job allows you to do that, it means that people have more time at home, which is probably one of the good things that came out of the pandemic. But it's not, if you're in a business like Maria or myself, that you have to be on site, that's not much good to you.
I think the majority of people in this county are employed in businesses that they couldn't work remotely. Maybe they're living here outside of their desk job in Dublin, but between the fishing and agriculture and hospitality. Go ahead, anyway.
You have 5,000 people working in Letterkenny and American companies that can work from home 2 or 3 days a week now. So if your corporation tax goes higher, you do worry, will them companies be there in 10 years' time? And that is a worry, no matter who is in government, that if they decide to stick up the corporation tax.
Okay, so yours is a no, you don't think we do, and the corporation tax is going up to at least 15, isn't it? Anyway, Maria Rush, could you see yourself voting for a new party that claims to, you know, have rural Ireland at its core?
From a farming background, so yeah, absolutely. There was a political party in Ireland in 1938 or 39, as far as I remember, Clan na Talamhain. And they were one of the newest parties that were created after the Free State was created. My understanding is that they filtered out in the 60s, and it was due to a decline in rural population, which in itself made sense if you look back historically. That is no longer the case. Why should our farmers and our people who live in rural Ireland not be speaking up and getting as much of a platform as everybody else? We've had conversations in this county in the last year about the whole idea of a MICA-centred political party. Why not? Why should we not speak up? Why should we not have groups? Now, of course, I do fully understand that if everybody's shouting all the time, how do we come to some agreement? But at the same time, we can't sit back and just say, well, you're not tallying with my views, so I'm not going to listen to you because you're not important. Mm. We are a country who's, whether we like it or not, we still depend on agriculture for everything. Mm-hmm. It is,
but it's possible nowhere. This party also might, right, if you're going to go for rural Ireland, let's just say some of the measures that have been introduced as it relates to climate change affect us mostly. So a political party might say, right, we need to actually maintain and grow the national herd in terms of farming. We need to allow people to cut turf in bogs for their own use. We need to cut carbon taxes on cars, right, so people can drive to and from work in rural Ireland. Would you be happy enough voting for them, even though that's really a backward step in where we need to get if we are all in the agreement that climate change is actually happening? I mean, that's the reality, you see, isn't it?
Yeah, but again, it's two polarised, very, very polarised versions of something that has to happen. There has to be an amalgamation. Of course, we all want climate change to be restricted. We all want to do it. We're all doing our bit. We're all doing our best. But at the same time, we can't just say, this is my opinion, so you should change what you're doing. Mm. And actually, I'm going to correct myself as well, because I mentioned rural Ireland and agriculture as if they're exclusive. They're not. The urban Ireland can't exist without agriculture either. Food, everything is. And we tend to sometimes do that, don't we? We tend to talk about agriculture and rural Ireland has been one thing that doesn't affect the people.
Well, I think the war in Ukraine was a wake-up call to urbanites as to the importance of what farmers do.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, and even now, where are all the tomatoes? What's happening here in my shop? You know, does the food not just get, you know, arriving from space on a spaceship in the morning? No one ever stopped to think about where the food comes from, you know? So, yeah, no, there's definitely, I think there's always room for positive voices, always, no matter what their point is. But I think the danger comes when you feel that your opinion is exclusive and that everybody else is wrong.
No, I get that. But then again, you'll see that, and it's funny the timing of these conversations, because I wouldn't say the Irish Farmers Journal did a hit piece on Sinn Féin, but it was an interesting headline in that they stated that farmers are scared stiff of a Sinn Féin government. But I just wonder, Richard, you know, like, say, for instance, you have the established parties there, the current government at the moment, and then you have the opposition, and then you have more parties coming in. Say you did have MICA candidates, defective concrete candidates, and say you did have rural Ireland. It splits the vote, really. Actually, it could strengthen the hand of the likes of Fine Gael and Fianna Fáil, because they probably would be more united, no?
I disagree with you, Greg, there, because the beauties of the Irish electoral system is that you do get the scope to get independents and all others elected to Dáil Éireann, where here in Britain there's no hope of that. I mean, Donegal did elect Tom Gildee many years ago on the back of having deflector TVs. So, you know...
I believe he spoke once in the Dáil.
Well...
If I'm not mistaken. And, yes, yeah, I know, yeah.
That was an achievement in itself. But you know, the fact is that the Irish electoral system does allow that. I think it's excellent. It does mean that we have to have coalition governments, which I actually back, and I think it's a good idea. I think I would certainly, whilst I personally, I'm not so sure I'd be voting for a party personally with an exclusively rural outlook, but I would think it would be an opportunity.
Throw them in the mix. Yeah.
To, you know, to be in the mix in government. And of course, as every politician will tell you, once you actually get in to government, you have to do some kind of compromise on your principles in order to get over the wire. But nevertheless, I welcome it. I think, you know, why not?
Why not? That's a good enough point. Yeah, indeed. Anyone travelling around Letterkenny over the last while will realise it's an absolute nightmare. I wouldn't like to be conducting business in it. If I was, I would actually be kicking up an absolute stink because what the conversation people are having outside of Letterkenny is don't go near it, really. And that is not good for business and it's not good for the town. Maybe that feeds into this question because, of course, discussions are always ongoing about the future of public transport, private transport. They continue around Letterkenny and the county and the country as a whole. We're going to get new legislation soon on the use of scooters. And we were talking to a company this week that's going to hope to have scooters that you just drop off on the side of the street where you, and drop jump on them. So we could see the more extensive use of them. As I say, there's talk about, you know, town buses for Letterkenny and elsewhere. And then, of course, the ongoing campaign for a Northwest Rail Link. So outside of flying cars, where do you see transport in Donegal being in 2030, Martin Harley? Do you think we'll still be chugging along in our diesels or trying to drag a one-ton SUV with a 1.2 petrol engine? Don't see the funk point to that, but anyway, it is what it is. Or do you think we will see something of a mini revolution over the next 7 or 10 years?
Realistically, Greg, I don't think so. If we're lucky enough to be living and well in 10 years' time, I don't think there'll be massive changes on that extent. But we talk away about rail. We need to look at rail. We need to see, is it viable? I don't know if it's viable or not.
Well, it just so happens I've got an expert in this area called Richard Logue. So I'll ask him, Richard Logue, is it viable? I thought we've already looked at that.
I've already talked extensively about this subject before, but what I would say is that, you know, we've been judging rail connections to a far higher standard than we ever do road connections. And the question as to, is it viable? My answer to that is it viable not to do it, because I see it as an investment. You know, if we're looking to grow the population, in other words, more housing, more jobs, then you need to have the backbone of that infrastructure in place. Does the population of Letterkenny, as it stands at the moment, support a rail connection? 100%. If you look at the border railway in Scotland, linking Edinburgh to Tweedbank and Galashiels, those two towns, Tweedbank and Galashiels, have populations smaller than Letterkenny has. So really, in the bigger scheme of things, it is. I think we have been unduly conservative in the past about assessing these projects. And I also agree, by the way, not just about rail, but I also think we need to have a proper dual carriageway connection from Letterkenny down. That means.
So do you think we need to move past the conversation about whether it's viable or not and actually just move into the planning stage? Because it is the future, isn't it?
Planning stage. You know, the question has already been answered in that we need it. We needed it maybe 20 years ago. And, you know, our whole policy of just sitting down and going back to the drawing board every 5 years is just not working. We need to crack on and do this stuff now.
I just wonder if projects like the Twin Towns Bypass will go ahead just with the way things are going. Martin, would you have those concerns? I know they're locked in and all that type of stuff, but I just wonder.
No, I would have no from meeting with the TAA back in the end of November, beginning of December last year. there's no issue with that. It will be going ahead. Okay.
But I think we need councillors like you and others. We need councillors like you and others not to be posing questions about rail, to trust the likes of Richard and others and just actually back it 100% and say, look, at you know, we are going to need this in the future, whether it's viable now or not. Do you know what I mean? Rather, I think we as a collective here in the Northwest need to move past, like, should we or shouldn't we, and just crack on with it. Everywhere else has it, and it's working. Why couldn't it work up here?
Yeah, well, suppose the only thing I'd be looking at, I look at the numbers that use the rail in other parts of Ireland, and that's why I would think to myself, is it viable? And that was why I mentioned the point, was it viable? Because I look at the numbers that are using the rail in different parts of Ireland, and so that's just...
Okay, well, we're running out of time, and I want to bring Maria back in on this, but I just want you to talk to that. Martin's concerned, I think, at the low level of rail usage elsewhere, and maybe that's an indicator that it might not be successful up here, Richard.
I disagree. There's two things that restrict the use of rail at the moment in Ireland as a whole, and that's the lack of services into places. I have a railway map, which you can see on the video, big hole in the northwest. Basically, the railway doesn't run very late at night. The last train from Dublin to many locations is at about 5:30 or 6 p.m. in the evening. So there needs to be a massive expansion. Now, we're hopeful that the All-Ireland Strategic Rail Review report will actually underwrite a lot of the things I've been talking about regarding the rail, the future of rail. But basically, experience elsewhere shows that if you provide the services, as they've done between Derry and Belfast, and run them, you know, late at night, people use them.
Okay. Right, in the last minute then, should we focus just on the Letterkenny situation, Maria? Because it is a town that you travel into and work in. I mean, it can't continue as is, whether e-scooters or town buses or complete overhauls required. Something has to be done.
Wouldn't it be great if we had a bridge over the...
I think you'd need two or three at this stage, but yeah, go on, one will do.
I feel like I spend most of my life on the Port Road at the minute, coming in and out of Newton, to be very honest. And you mentioned the effect on businesses, and I can tell you for a fact it is affecting businesses. We have lost members who are no longer willing to sit for 40 minutes into Letterkenny and out of Letterkenny to go to the gym. That's the truth. You know, you talk about planning and future planning. It seems that there's traffic lights just arriving everywhere. It's like decoration at this point. I would hate to be an ambulance driver or a driver of the emergency services in this town at the minute. Every time I see blue lights, I feel not only for the person that they're going to, but for the people trying to drive through the town. Fully understand that infrastructure is important, that things need to be done. There have been great improvements in the town in the last 10 years. But I think, again, we're back to planning. It's 200 years since...
But all the work's going on at the moment doesn't necessarily actually improve the throughput or flow of traffic. Let's not... I mean, that four lanes was hold. I was chatting to a fella. He was late for his wedding in the 70s because of road works on the four lanes. I thought he was a brilliant character. So these things are great and pretty and lovely cycle lanes, but they're not actually really increasing or improving the flow.
Well, there were still four lanes there 5 years ago, 10 years ago. That there's no difference now except that, well, there's trees and it's looking lovely. But, you know, I don't know. We talk about planning. We talk about futurizing things. Over 200 years ago, somebody sat in a meeting in New York and said, here, this is going to get very busy very quick, and we better put grids in to make life easy for people. And they did. What the London Underground, correct me if I'm wrong, Richard, was the 1800s as well.
Yep. And a lot of it was built in open countryside, and they developed around it.
Yeah. And I traveled to London quite often, and I have never had issue. It's a joy. You'd land, you'd turn up. Where am I going? That's how I get there. And just to finish quickly, we had a guy applied for one of our jobs recently from a large country in Europe who couldn't understand when Emmett rang him back to explain that you can't live in Dublin and work in Letterkenny at 6 o'clock in the morning because it's a 3.5 to 4 hour commute. And for on the map, he was looking at Ireland thinking, my wife has got a job in Dublin. We're moving to Dublin. I'm willing to travel to Letterkenny for my work. He couldn't understand that there would not be infrastructure for that to happen. So we're losing out bigger than just what's happening at the town at the minute.
I wish we had another hour. Maria Rush, fitness instructor with Rush Fitness, and blogger at Maria Living Out Loud. Where do people go to find Maria Living Out Loud? Instagram, all over the place?
It's just Facebook. It's the same page as the S-Mum blog, Greg. I just renamed it because
I
found myself unable to write as a mummy. I don't want to share my kids' lives anymore. It's not
their
story.
That's your call. That's so another interview. All right, listen, thanks very much indeed. I appreciate it. Martin Harley, thank you very much as always for accepting our invite. Great to have you.
Thank you, Greg.
Right, bye-bye. And last not least, Richard Lowe, great to see you again. And hopefully it's not too long before we have you back on.
My pal Troy Gallagher, great ambassador for Letterkenny, who's listening in down in Dublin. He's been doing a lot of stuff down at the Global Irish Forum and promoting Letterkenny big time as well this week.
Indeed. Great man. All right, thanks so much indeed. Take care of yourself.